supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
It is the official beginning today of the Bill O'Brien era as the new Nittany Lions debut against Ohio at noon. You're listening to WHYY.
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we got an email from someone who planted a red crepe myrtle, and then in the second season, the flowers bloomed white. I thought I knew why this happened, that it had to do with grafted plants. We'll find out if I was right, talk about grafted plants, and reveal the true cause of this myrtle's misbehavior. Otherwise, it's a phone call show, cats and kittens, and you know what that means. We're taking that heaping helping at 1-888-346-9499. Katie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi there. I have a question which may not be answerable, but I need to know.
Katie,
has tremendous chiggers. I don't know if you know what those are in her yard, and I stood out there for about 10 minutes one day, did not get against any of the grass except with the bottoms of my shoes, got lots of chiggers. We have chiggers in Missouri, which is where I'm from. I said to my husband, boy, if I had chiggers like that, I would spray for them. He said, nope, spray's worse than the chiggers.
Well, that is true.
Anything you can do that's natural for chiggers?
Yes. Now, first of all, of course I have to know how to get rid of chiggers. I have to know how to get rid of everything without chemicals.
That's what happens when you're the expert.
There is, at our website, You Bet Your Garden, under the Garden Answers A to Z section, under C, there is an entry for chiggers. And it is universally agreed upon by gardeners and farmers and outdoorsmen that of all the outdoor pests we have to endure, chiggers are the worst. They're not even parasites. They're just hitching a ride. They don't feed on us. But when they dig underneath our skin to hide, they irritate the heck out of us. And it is
absolutely
almost universally agreed they are the biggest outdoor annoyance. The actual rule is fill a tub with hot water as hot as you can take it and get in there right away. And
okay.
That'll negate them. That'll kill them. And then if you put some baking soda in the water, it may knock all of the damage out before you start scratching and making it worse. Now, I have a very simple solution for you. First of all, your friend should do what she can to keep her brush cut down low and to keep the area dry. Chiggers are not insects. They are arachnids. They're in the mite family. And they like damp brush. They don't like bright sunlight. They don't like dry conditions. Your husband is right. If you start spraying chemicals around outside, you'll get sick, and the chiggers will probably think of it as a Flintstone vitamin. But but there is a very low-dose chemical insecticide that you can use to protect yourself, and it's what I use during tick season when I go outside. What you want to do is go to a hunting or fishing store, and and you want to buy a clothing spray for ticks and chiggers. It will they come under different names. They are a half of 1% permethrin, and this is what the military uses for troops that need to go into tick-infested areas. DEET, the chemical repellent that people put on their skin, DEET is not that effective against ticks. It's effective against mosquitoes. It's also toxic. But if you need to protect yourself from ticks and chiggers and other insects that are going to hop onto you, the smartest thing to do is get one of these 0.5% permethrin sprays. You take some clothing outside. You spray the clothing. You let it dry. And then you wear that clothing when you go into an area where you suspect you have chiggers. They will not come near you. You didn't have to spray any outdoor areas. You didn't put anything on your skin. And it is a remarkably low dose of a chemical insecticide. Now, it is a chemical insecticide. And people are sometimes amazed that I will recommend it. It's a very low concentration. You don't bring it into the environment. It can't harm anything other than the insects or arachnids that want to hurt you. You don't put it on your skin. It doesn't go into your skin. And the remarkable thing is one spray will keep a piece of clothing protective for weeks and weeks and weeks, even if you wash the clothing.
Oh, but wow, that's great.
So all you got to do, you know, obviously you got to wear long pants and socks when you go over there.
Sure.
But that's better than chiggers. So
yes, a lot.
So and that's the important area. You know, some people would even spray their sneakers.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for your help.
All right, Katie, good luck and be chigger-free for the rest of the summer.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. 1-888-346-9499. Stacy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Stacy. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Well, thank you.
I have a little bit of an emergency that I think only you can help me with.
Only you can help me, Obi-Wan. You're our only hope. Where are you, Stace?
I'm in Hopewell Township, New Jersey.
Okay.
And which is kind of west. Like, if I had a really good arm, I could throw a rock and hit Pennsylvania.
Okay, well, please don't do that. We haven't done anything to New Jersey.
Well, here's why I'm calling you. I have a beautiful maple tree, and this is kind of a common thing on my block. We have all these beautiful maple trees that spring up all over the block, many different colors and varieties. Some are shrubs, some are trees. And whenever they pop up in the lawn or in the garden, I always rescue them and find them a new home. And there's one that is absolutely the most vibrant red you've ever seen in your life. And it's just outside my son's bedroom window. It was a tiny little 1 foot sprig when I rescued it. And it made the most beautiful glow in the morning. And we love this tree. Now, it's probably about 4 years old and 8 feet tall. And out of the blue, randomly, it just shriveled up. All those beautiful leaves are now crumpled and dry and falling off. And I'm heartbroken. I don't know what to do about this.
Did this happen during the record-breaking heat wave?
Yeah, but here's the thing. We have a water in our basement issue, and there's a pipe that's got holes in it. It's a very wet area, so it's not dry. There's a pipe that runs kind of close to it and it wasn't there when I first planted the tree. It's kind of a new situation for the tree, actually. So the water pipe runs to pump water out of the basement right by it.
Okay. Now, stop there. When was this pipe installed?
September.
Okay. So it was installed last year as the tree was going into dormancy.
Yes.
Yes. And was a trench dug for the pipe?
Yes.
And who did this work?
My handy husband.
An 8 foot tall tree would typically have roots going out, probably feeder roots, 20 feet.
Oh.
The roots go out as far as the furthest branch above. In other words, it's a mirror image generally underground.
Right.
So I'm thinking that this pipe came close to being a stake through the heart.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I don't think the water leaking. I think he may have damaged more roots than you guys were thinking about. And could we go back into a time machine? We might want to be a little more cautious, and we might want to paint the severed roots underground with white latex paint, which is a trick I did once when I had to do some construction too close to a major tree. Red maples are not very hardy trees. We get a lot of complaints about them dying out soon. Is it growing out of a lawn?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And is there any mulch underneath it to keep lawnmowers and weed whackers away?
No.
So the grass is just growing right up to the tree.
Yeah, and okay. It has some marks on it from the weed whacker.
Right. Yeah, that's the reason that sensible mulching is done, to keep mechanical objects away from the tree. Is the lawn treated with weed killers? Is it fertilized?
No. We're definitely not doing that.
Okay, so you don't do anything to your lawn? You don't feed it at all?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So there's two possibilities here. Either the stress of having some roots severed last year, combined with the drought took the tree down. Or this pipe is leaking as much as you suspect. The area has gotten waterlogged, and the waterloggedness has killed the tree. Everybody knows that plants need water, but they also need their roots to dry out. There are very few trees that can survive in a constantly wet situation. You might have gotten enough photosynthesis this year for the tree to still be alive in its root system. It's not going to produce new leaves. If you can handle the look of it now, you can let it remain in place and see if it greens up again next spring. If it doesn't, then your only choice is to take it out. Be careful not to break the pipe when you do that, and plant any new trees away from this pipe. And then you can water them normally during drought. And then if you do leave it in and it does green up, I would urge you to get a nice non-wood mulch, like a compost mulch, or shred up your leaves this fall and give, starting 6 inches from the tree, mulch out to where the top of the crown ends on the tree to keep mowers and weed whackers away from it. Because this thing has been, you know, it sounds like it's been kicked down the street like a tin can.
Yeah, it has, and I love it so much. I'll definitely wait till the spring to see what happens.
All right, good luck, Stace.
Thank you so much.
All right, take care. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll appear at the Silverside Church Green Fair in Wilmington, Delaware on Saturday, September 15th at 10:30 and 12:30, and at the Mount Laurel, New Jersey Library on Sunday, October 6th at 1 and 3. But don't go looking for all the details at the events and appearances section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with lots more of your fabulous phone calls and the reason red crepe myrtles may change their color to white. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Burpee, a national supplier of seeds, plants, and bulbs, supports You Bet Your Garden and reminds growers that now is the time to start fall crops like broccoli, cabbage, and cauliflower, and to get ready for garlic planting. More information at burpee.com.
You're listening to You Bet Your Garden on WHYY.
A stroke can rob us of our ability to speak, to move, to understand. The new Mainline Health Neurovascular Center at Bryn Mawr Hospital uses an interventional approach to the rapid treatment of stroke and aneurysm. Formed in collaboration with stroke experts from Jefferson's Faculty Practice Plan and the Jefferson Neuroscience Network, they use minimally invasive techniques to avoid open brain surgery, to prevent disabilities, and to save lives. The Mainline Health Neurovascular Center at Bryn Mawr Hospital supports WHYY.
When tobacco taxes go up, people smoke less. So what about a tax on soda or junk food?
It might not be too many more years until we get to a point where people think of McDonald's food in the way they think about tobacco, and with that, more tolerance for increasing regulation.
I'm David Lazarus. Should the government legislate good health? We'll debate that next time on Marketplace Money from APM.
This afternoon at 3 on WHYY.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, color change in established plants is a surprisingly common occurrence. There's one main reason that it happens, but is that the reason a red crepe myrtle has turned white? We'll reveal all when we get to the question of the week. In the meantime, though, it's a fabulous phone call show, so we're taking that heap and helping at 1-888-346-9499. Carol, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Carol. How are you?
I'm good, about 50 miles north of Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Oh, good Lord. How could anybody be good there this summer? You have had to endure, like, impossibly hellish conditions, haven't you?
Absolutely. We're closer to fall than spring.
Nice to hear that you have a good attitude about it. What can we do for Carol in Oklahoma?
Very quick and simple question, Mike. It's a he said, she said. And
well,
there's a 10-cent bet and a beer riding on it.
Well, generally, 90% of the time, the woman is, of course, correct. So we'll start with that. But go ahead.
He says, who's replanting all the clover that I threw on the compost pile? And she said, those aren't weeds. There are two good reasons to leave the clovers in the garden. They have little flowers that the tiny pollinators like, and they're fixed in nitrogen. And so we're bringing this to the ultimate arbiter.
Well, of course. I mean, you fall immediately into the 90%. It's probably closer to 97%. I wanted to give the guys a little feel good out there.
Yeah.
But where is your clover? Is it in a lawn? Is it in raised beds? Is it in the rooftop? Where is it?
It's in raised beds and containers.
Oh, okay. Well, then it's interesting. Yes, you're absolutely correct. A lot of times we will tell people who have specific pollination or pest issues to plant certain things to bring in beneficial insects and or pollinators. Very often culinary herbs that will be allowed to flower. And is it white clover?
This is the natural tall grass, prairie, whatever is here.
So,
you know, there's white clover, red clover, sour grass, I call it, and mm-hmm. whatever was there. In 18 years, I have never really mowed the tall grass prairie that surrounds us here.
Right.
So it's whatever was here.
And some of it migrates to your raised beds and containers.
Yes.
Well, as you know, clover is synonymous with bees, especially honeybees.
Right.
Fields of clover are often planted for them so that they can make that certain taste of honey. And you're absolutely correct. All clovers have the ability, as long as there is a symbiotic bacteria
right.
in the soil, that the top part of the plant can absorb the nitrogen from the air we breathe and actually store the nitrogen in the plant, use it to feed the plant, and then when the plant is either cut or goes back to the soil, it returns that nitrogen. And it's very easy to tell if this nitrogen fixation, that almost sounds like a bad thing. I'm sorry, I'm gardening, I have a nitrogen fixation. But it's real easy to tell if this natural thing is happening. You can simply pull up a couple of clovers, and you want to look for, like, little galls, little round things on the roots, which in some plants would be really bad. But that's actually a creation of the symbiotic relationship between the plant and the bacteria. And if you want to go nuts and you don't have the bacteria, you can buy it. You can buy inoculants.
Sure.
And dust them into the soil. But I would think that just for the pollination alone, to have some white and red clover in with your vegetables or flowers, that's going to bring in all kind of native bees.
I win.
And especially with the hellish summer you've been through, these pollinators need all the help they can get. What I would also suggest is you put out some dishes. Maybe you have some old plates that have a little crack in them or a chip in them. These are like the kind of thing that nobody knows what to do with because we're not allowed to throw them away,
mm-hmm.
But they're useless otherwise. Fill them with little stones and pebbles and fill them with water for your pollinators and put those out in the same area.
Excellent.
And they'll come in for the clover. Absolutely guaranteed they'll come in for the clover. But then the water you'll be latching up all the pollinators and all the beneficial insects in the area. And finally, white clover is a neglected food source.
Oh.
White clover used to be a very popular pioneer food. And if you go to our website, if you go to youbetyourgarden.org and look under Garden Answers A to Z, under C for clover, I'm absolutely certain that I recounted the stories of how to prepare and eat white clover and probably gave some references for following up on it. But I believe at a certain time in our country's history, it was the difference between life and death over the wintertime that the clovers were harvested and made into flour, and it got people through the winter. I believe they're incredibly nutritious.
All right. Well, thank you, Mike.
Well, thank you. Good luck. And I think you get more than a dime. I call for a quarter.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Robbie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Greetings, Mike. Thanks for having me. I have three quick questions for you. Fire them off, all off, or do one by one?
I have a quick question for you, Robbie.
Yes, sir.
Where are you?
I'm in Maubelle, Arkansas. Most people probably don't know where that is, but to kind of put it, pinpoint it a little better, Little Rock is our largest suburb.
Oh, okay. So you are the big city, and Little Rock is the suburb.
Exactly. I see Little Rock as our suburb.
Shoot me the basic topics, and I'll lead you from there.
Okay, Mule Organic. Not for sure if you've talked about that before. It's rather cheap where I can pick it up. I can get it for under $6 a bag through the place I work, and for a 50-pound bag. So that's. I'm just curious, is that truly organic fertilizer?
It is not allowed for use in organic agriculture because it is dried human waste from the sewer systems of Milwaukee. You can't use any sewage sludge in certified organic agriculture. One of the big issues people have always had with Milorganite, however, is it's not composted the way most sewage sludge is. It's just dried in big ovens. And so there are concerns about that. I would certainly never use it near any kind of a food crop. Some people might want to use it on a lawn, but I got to tell you, I have concerns over the things people put into the sewer systems that aren't even human waste. And, you know, people take so many medications now that those medications come through in the end product that I don't even like the idea of using it on a lawn because it's going to get into the watershed and into the local water supplies.
Well, that leads me to another question that I had as far as using water from our municipal water system, with the medications getting into the water supply with, for example, not just medications, but fluoride and other heavy metals. But what do you think about that?
I sympathize with you being on city water. I use a fluoride toothpaste, but I don't want fluoride in all my water. I certainly don't want it being treated with aluminum to clarify it or with chlorine bleach to kill microbes in it. I prefer my system. I run my stuff through a UV light and some filters at home to clean it up, and we have well water, and it's just absolutely delicious. If it isn't overly expensive for you, I would advise you to look into some basic filtration systems that can be added pretty early on in your water line. I'm not talking about reverse osmosis, which you would only use for actual drinking water. But if you ran this city water through a couple of big carbon filters, which they sell at all the big home stores, they just latch right onto your plumbing, I'd be a lot more comfortable about using that water. The truth is, nobody knows how plants or humans react to these trace elements, but we sure are running a lot of unregulated medical experiments in America right now, and really nobody's taking notes, so we don't know what's going on. So I would, if you can afford to, and we're talking an investment of, you know, maybe 100 or 200 to get started, and then 20, 30 bucks a year for new filters, it would make me more comfortable if the water coming into my house had been a little bit cleaned up as it got there.
Great. And quickly, can I ask one more thing? My neighbor's grass clippings, I mulch, but he bags. Can
right.
I use his grass clippings on my yard? He uses once in a while he'll use a little bit of fertilizer and a pre-emergent.
No. It has been shown over and over again. Some of these new herbicides are so powerful that even if the grass clippings are part of a compost pile and they compost down completely, the grass clippings can kill other plants. So, yeah, I mean, these herbicides in use today are tremendously powerful. What you should be trying to talk your neighbor into doing is getting a mulching mower and returning those clippings to his lawn. Not only will his lawn look so much better and it'll break down any thatch he has from overfeeding, but that's the safest use for his clippings, which are otherwise toxic waste.
Right. Well, thank you very much, Mike.
All right. Three great questions. Thank you, Robbie.
Yes, bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Joanne, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks for taking my call, Mike.
Well, thank you for making it, Joanne. Where are you?
I am at the beach in New Jersey.
Oh, okay. Well, what beach?
I had just left Margate.
Oh, okay.
Perfect. Perfect day for the beach.
Did you say hello to Lucy the elephant?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I did.
All right. Very good. And but you are not a beach liver, I presume. You're on vacation.
Yeah, I just ran down for the day. I just had to go.
And where are you when you're not at the beach?
I'm in Woodbury, New Jersey.
All right. Very good. Well, you keep it all inside the same state.
Yes.
What can we do you for?
I have 4 raised vegetable beds, and 3 of them are doing stellar. Everything's coming out, well, almost everything. But my tomato plants, for the first time ever, I didn't get any tomato plants. The first set of plants that produced fruit, as soon as the fruit was ready to pick, they were the golden pear tomatoes. They're great in your salads. The plant just shriveled up and died, as if it had never had any water, which is not the case. So I pulled them out, and I looked for bugs. I looked for fungus. I didn't see anything. The other plant closest to it is thriving. The plants behind it, thriving. They stopped producing fruit, and now the 2 plants closest to the one I tore out, they have also shriveled up and died, so I have to rip them out. So my question is twofold. One is, is this just standard blight? And if so, how do I get rid of it?
No. Every gardener I've ever met has the most incredible case of disease phobia. Now, have you been planting in these raised beds for a while now?
No, they're new beds this season.
Oh, okay. What did you make them out of?
We have gorgeous soil at my house, and we also added some organic compost.
There's no such thing.
Well, that's what my sister got, and that's what she said it was.
So uh-huh. And what would inorganic compost be made of?
I'm afraid to answer that question, so I don't know.
Did she just give you bulk compost? Was it in a bag?
My sister buys a ton of it and has it put in the driveway, and then all of us, the gardeners, we all just come and take whatever compost we need.
Okay. So,
and everything's thriving except the tomatoes.
Okay. So you filled your raised beds with this compost of unknown origin.
With compost and dirt.
Your own dirt.
Yes.
How have you been watering during the dry times?
I have a sprinkler that's set up closest to the tomato bed, and, you know, it oscillates. So it fills the tomato bed first, and then behind the tomato bed is potatoes, which are not in a raised bed. They just went into the ground. So it waters those 2 things first, and then it goes to the other direction and waters the other beds. I usually water in the morning, or I water at night, depending on what my morning routine is. I try not to water during the day so they don't burn up.
No, that's the wrong thing. Watering in the night is the worst for your plants.
Okay.
By letting them sit out at night, you could have caused this. How often have you been watering?
Every couple of days.
And how long at a stretch?
Oh, probably about an hour or 2 at a stretch.
Okay. And you said you've actually pulled plants out of the ground and replaced them, right?
I did not replace them. I pulled them out of the ground and just left the other plants that were there.
Okay, that's good. What did the roots look like?
They didn't look like, they looked like they had just been taken out of the pot that I bought them in. It wasn't like they ever, it didn't look like they really had
grown
deep enough into the soil.
Huh. Okay, so your roots never spread out, even though you didn't plant them in their pots or with any constraints or anything, did you?
Nope. Mm-mm.
Yeah,
no.
That's highly unusual. What have you fed your plants?
I haven't fed them anything because I've never fed anybody anything, any of my plants anything, and they've always flourished.
Yes.
So the only thing I did different this year was the compost.
Yes, but there's only so much food that's in remnants of soil. I mean, you know, for instance, if DHS came by your house and you explained, no, I've never fed my children nothing, I'm not doing anything different now, they would still take them away. So I would immediately go out and get a good, high-quality organic plant food. I really like seaweed and fish mixtures. Give the plants that are out there a feeding. Try to get some organic mulch like shredded leaves on the surface of the soil. And I would actually do a little CSI. I would actually dig around at the base of these plants and try to spread these roots out in the evening, and then really soak the soil only at the evening, not wetting the leaves. Try to get these roots to spread out, because that's kind of weird. And give them a feeding. I'd also like you to go to our website and read through the tomato planting and tomato growing instructions. There may be something else that you'll latch on to. But I can tell you that, yes, for a year or two, people can often get by without feeding their plants. After that, it catches up to you when the nutrients have all been taken from the soil.
Okay.
All right, good luck.
Yep, I'll let you know how my cucumbers respond to that, too.
I'll be waiting with bated breath.
Thank you.
Take care. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind gardeners far and wide that the time for pruning is over. I don't care what the plant is. Don't cut it back until winter or spring. Unless you want to get rid of it, of course. Instead, keep busy by planting garlic, pansies, and salad greens, by feeding your cool season lawn, and by getting ready for the big leaf fall to come. Those captured leaves are all you'll need for a great garden next year. But don't go looking for all the details in our Garden Answers A to Z section just yet, because we'll be right back with the secret behind the curious case of color change in a crepe and more of your fascinating phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Burpee, a national supplier of seeds, plants, and bulbs, supports You Bet Your Garden and reminds growers that now is the time to start fall crops like broccoli, cabbage, and cauliflower, and to get ready for garlic planting. More information at burpee.com.
It's 11:38. You're listening to WHYY.
Where you go to know what's happening in the arts. From paintings to plays to pastries, Friday Arts celebrates local cultural expression October 5th, where you go to know tomorrow's greats today. Starting October 14th, On Stage at Curtis showcases powerful performers and captivating concerts. Where you go to know what inspires talented musicians. On Canvas features legends and up-and-comers, on stage and behind the curtain, starting October 18th. The new fall season on WHYY-TV, where you go to know.
Next week, the Democratic Party will meet in Charlotte, North Carolina, to renominate Barack Obama for president. NPR will be there bringing you speeches, interviews, and analysis from inside the arena. I'm Ron Elving. Join us each night for special coverage of the Democratic National Convention from NPR News.
Beginning Tuesday night at 8 on WHYY-FM and WHYY-TV.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll be getting to the question of the week. Why did a red crepe myrtle suddenly bloom white? We'll also explain the reason why many plants can have this happen to them. A very important piece of horticultural information for you to know. And you'll know it. It's coming up right after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Rob, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello, Rob. How are you?
Doing fine.
And where is Rob fine?
Rob is fine in Newark, Delaware.
Very good, sir. What can we do you for?
Well, I've been listening to your show for a while, and I've changed my ways and all my vegetables and made them raised beds, but I've never done it to my strawberries.
Oh, okay.
And I'm in a position where this year, with the weather that we had, the crop was terrible. Whereas previous years, I harvested a fair amount in just a small 4x10 patch.
Right.
So I want to put them in raised beds. Or my question is, raised beds or just mounds like I see in the orchards?
Well, now you say that your harvest this year was terrible because of the weather. Why do you say that? Early on, it was a pretty good season for fruit.
Well, I guess my problem is because my garden has gotten overgrown a bit with the strawberries. I haven't been able to, since it's just flat ground where they're growing, I haven't thinned it out. And they got all this gray mold on them and ruined most of the crop.
Right.
Whereas last year, I got 20 jars of jam out of it.
Now, were you getting a lot of rain, Rob, or were you irrigating? Were you watering them at night or something? Because it was pretty dry during the harvest season.
I have a soaker hose that runs at 4 in the morning for 45 minutes every other day.
Okay. Well, I would advise you, because if you do listen to the show, you know I advocate longer, deeper watering. But that's not the worst thing you could do. It's not like you were turning a sprinkler on them at 9 o'clock at night or something like that.
No.
Okay. How long has this strawberry patch been in existence?
Well, I think that's part of the problem. It's 4 years, and with it being in flat ground and no partitions in it, I haven't been able to get in and weed out the baby plants. So I think the main problem is it's overgrown itself.
I think you want to be weeding out the older plants and keeping what are called the daughters. Now, I'm no expert on strawberry growing. I certainly don't know as much about it as I do about raspberries or even my priceless peaches. But it's my understanding that your patch is at the time of life where, and I believe, unfortunately, the ideal time for this was probably after your harvest or your lack of harvest, where you literally would take a lawnmower and mow down the old plants and allow them to regrow from the root system, and that rejuvenates them. And my understanding is this needs to be done about every 3 or 4 years, and as the patch gets older, maybe every year or every other year, because I believe no strawberry patch can last for longer than 6 or 7 years before it just starts to peter out. Well, what I would suggest is, do you have a raised bed that's open?
Not that I want to use. What I was considering doing is tearing these out, saving a bunch of plants, tearing these out and either building the mounds or putting in raised beds and putting them back in.
That's an excellent idea. The only question is, can you get it done before the frost hits? Because it's very difficult to keep the strawberry plants alive over winter if you haven't done it before, you know, if they're out of the ground.
Right. No, that was part of my question, is whether I should do it now or in the spring.
I would move like a bunny. I would jump. I would hop. I would get out there. I would gather every container I could find. And in this case, you can even use like bogus cowboy containers because you're only going to be in them for about a week. Make sure the soil in them is light and loose. Don't fill them with your clay soil. This is a good time to have some potting soil and some compost. And dig up the youngest, greenest, best-looking plants and just put their roots into the soil of these containers. Water them well, and then just, you know, turn over the old decrepit plants. Just save enough of these, this year's, quote, daughters to start fresh again. And then build that raised bed really fast. Make sure you fill it with high-quality topsoil and or compost, and get those daughters back in there as quickly as you can. Space them out nice and far apart. And water them really well to get them established. But this is not a bad time to do it because the plant should naturally be going dormant. So it's like a small child being brought in from the van at like midnight. You can bang their head into a doorway once or twice. They're not going to notice anything. dormant plants are pretty easily moved. But I would want them to be established and in their new raised bed before we had our first hard frost.
I can do that.
All right, Rob?
Very good.
All right.
Appreciate your time. Love
my pleasure. Good luck, sir.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Take care. 1-888-346-9499. Nancy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. I love your program.
Why?
I listen to it every week.
Why, thank you. Where are you, Nance?
I'm in Media, PA. I live in a senior community called Granite Farms Estates, and we have a little community garden, which I have been participating in for, this will be my third year, and it's been a lot of fun. And I had 2 tomato plants this year and some flowers and some string beans. Now, I noticed that some of the plots, because they're small plots, have been year after year planted with just tomatoes.
Right, they are the gateway drug of gardening.
Well, the only problem is, from what I understand, you really should rotate the crops, and there's no way they can rotate the crops if you plant tomatoes every year, except they obviously do it in Jersey on the farms. So what I will be able to move my tomato plant up to the front of my garden, but some of the other folks don't have that option, and I was wondering, what can they do to plant tomato plants again next year in the same place?
The danger with replanting tomatoes in the same area year after year is no matter what type of gardener you are, whether you're a flat earther, whether you grow in raised beds, whether you're organic, whether you use chemicals, a soil-borne wilt will build up in the soil. There are different wilts that affect warm climates and cool climates, but it really doesn't matter. Sooner or later, when you plant tomatoes in the same spot year after year, what will happen is the bottom leaves of the tomato plant will start turning yellow, and the yellowness will progress up the plant.
Is there anything they can do if
Yes.
they still want to plant? I don't know why anybody would want to plant 6 or 8 tomato plants when you're living in a community like this. I mean, you're overstocked. But anyway, well, what can they do? Do you have any suggestions? Or
well, first of all, you have to apologize for bad-mouthing tomato growing, Nance. I mean, come on. People's desire to grow their own summer tomatoes put my kids through college. You know, let's not denigrate this.
Okay. Well, I was very successful. Okay, back to my friends who...
Unfortunately, if they continue without thinking, it's going to get worse every year.
Yeah.
So the first thing you can do is inform them.
Yes.
You can go to our website, go to You Bet Your Garden, go under Garden Answers A to Z, and print out one of the tomato trouble articles and show them.
Okay.
So... the things that they can do, if they're growing in raised beds, they can replace some of the soil.
They're not growing in raised beds.
Yeah. No. Well, for instance, this year, when they take their plants out of the ground, at the same time, if they have a shovel with them, any soil they can remove where the root system was. I mean, I presume everybody takes their tomatoes out of the ground like I do. They just yank them. They just yank the old vine out, and you get a good amount of soil, and you get a little hole. The more of the soil they can remove from that area around the hole and toss in the woods or toss underneath some shrubs, the better.
Okay.
And then replace that with some nice compost or high-quality topsoil. That will literally physically remove some of the wilt organism.
Okay.
And then what they need to do next year, a lot of times this holds people back from planting heirlooms, but I would recommend that they look for varieties that have the letters V and F after the name of the tomato.
Did you say V as in victory?
V as in victor and F as in fusilarius.
Okay.
That's for verticillium and fusarium wilt. And many tomatoes will have letters after their name. And this, as you mentioned, farmers. This is what farmers will often do. They will grow highly resistant varieties. But even so, they do have to move them around or replace soil or bake the soil for a season when the wilt gets too bad. But in a case like yours, where I realize people are just growing for fun, they don't want to go to too much trouble, remove as much of the soil from around the root system as they can and grow resistant varieties next year, they'll do much better.
Okay, and I thank you for the information. That's wonderful. Your show is just full of information. I appreciate it very much.
My wife says that to me every night, except sometimes she substitutes a word for information.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, you have a good sense of humor.
All right, Nancy, okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week, which we're calling the Curious Case of Color Change in Crepe and Gregarious Generalizations About Graphs. You Bet Your Garden producer Alexis Landis, please read off this week's fabulous question.
Well, Lisa, about 5 miles from Cape May, New Jersey, writes, I purchased a Red Rocket crepe myrtle 2 years ago specifically because of the bright red blooms that were covering the plant. Last year, I anxiously awaited their reappearance, but the flowers that emerged were white. How did this happen? Is there anything I can do?
Well, this is one of those questions where I was pretty sure I knew the answer right off the bat. as flowers changing color is a common occurrence with grafted plants. So let's take a short detour and use roses, kind of the poster child for grafted plants, to explain this important horticultural topic. Although some roses and other kinds of plants, like fruit trees, are sold, quote, on their own roots, many are a combination of the blooming section of one plant grafted onto the rootstock of a different variety of the same kind of plant. Now, if the top grafted part of such a plant dies, or if the grafted area is covered by soil or mulch, the rootstock will take over and produce flowers or fruits that are not even close to the ones you had hoped for. Roses that are specifically bred for the far north pretty much have to be the own root variety, as these plants need to be heavily mulched, sometimes completely covered, to reliably survive those really frigid winters. But in most parts of the country, purchased roses can come either way, as a single plant from top to bottom, or as two very different roses that have been joined together. When an otherwise desirable rose has a deficiency or a weakness that makes it difficult to grow, cuttings are taken and joined to the root system of a different, tougher rose. The rose used for the rootstock may be more vigorous, cold-hardy, heat-tolerant, disease- or pest-resistant, or have other admirable qualities, but its flowers are not one of them. In fact, one of the best and most commonly used rootstocks is the infamous multiflora rose, one of the most despised invasive plants in the parts of the country where it was ill-advisedly installed as a, quote, living fence. Now, with any kind of grafted plant, whether it's a fruit tree, a rose, a tomato, it's always vitally important to keep the graft above the soil line. Because if the graft, an obvious area with a bulge, generally a few inches to a foot above the root system, is covered by soil or mulch, new growth will sprout from the root system, eventually producing a different flower or fruit than the one you wanted, and often killing the top half of the plant that had been producing the desired piece of horticulture. Same thing if you ever pruned below a graft. Then you only got one plant left, and it wasn't the one you thought you had. This is a classic result when people, quote, whack their roses. They cut so low, they prune off all of the rose they wanted, and then they wonder why they have this thorny, aggressive thing in its place. Grafted or not, you should never whack your roses. You can and should cut the canes back throughout the growing season to remove spent rose hips and diseased areas, but stop pruning at the end of August to allow the plant to go dormant. Fall pruning invites the kind of winter injury that can kill the top part of a grafted plant and give you that new and inferior rose. Always prune your roses in the spring and be sure to cut well above any grafts. But getting back to our ostensive topic, I had no idea whether this variety of crepe myrtle, remember the crepe myrtle, or any variety of crepe myrtle are ever grafted plants. So I contacted Monrovia, the breeder of Red Rocket. Their response? Nah, they're all grown from cuttings and shipped on their own roots.
Wah, wah.
So I emailed back to ask if they knew of any other reason this kind of color change could be happening. One in-house expert after another passed on my question, and it was starting to look like I was going to be fertilizer out of luck. But the Monrovia press people kept looking around and found an excellent article by crepe myrtle expert Dr. Gary Knox of the University of Florida called Seeing Red, in which he explores the breeding and development of myrtles with vibrantly crimson blooms. After listing the best red flowering varieties currently available, Dr. Knox highlights a paragraph that's the horticultural equivalent of a black box warning on pharmaceuticals. I quote, "Full sun needed. Most red-flowered crepe myrtles have one important quirk. Flower buds that open under cloudy skies or in shady situations develop pink or white flowers, not red. While some people find this attractive, most people are upset since they thought they had bought red crepe myrtles. Apparently, full sun is needed for full expression of the red flower pigment. Accordingly, gardeners, landscapers, and retailers should make sure that red-flowered crepe myrtles are placed in areas receiving full sun. Mystery solved, lesson learned. Thank you, Dr. Knox. Well, that sure was some interesting information about red crepe myrtles and grafted plants, now wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website, where you can read it over carefully and follow links to lots more articles about roses and crepe myrtle care. Just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes! My producer is threatening to cut me below the graft if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse team towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live. Please put the actual subject in the subject line and check voiced to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week. Find the solution to hundreds of garden problems, hint, hint, just like yours, hint, hint, in our Garden Answers A to Z section. And or listen to this show, listen to old shows, and or download this week's podcast. Elizabeth Perez-Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queener plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Fred Snyder. Our webmaster is Baneful Rich Banowitz. His faithful internet companion is Sarah Kazar. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Be sure to check our Facebook page for daily updates. And will you like us already, please? There's no graft on Alexis Landis, who produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Our new production assistant, Joanna Hatzis, appears to be firmly on her own roots. Our esteemed editor, Al Banks, is eminently well-rooted. I'm rootless Mike McGrath. So I'll just wander around aimlessly until I see you next week. Hey, what do you mean like every week? I don't lack direction. I just won't ask for them. Which is why we once drove from Virginia Beach to Norfolk by way of North Carolina. Hey, it could have happened to anybody. And who was I going to ask? A pelican? Hey, you bird boy, does your beak really hold more than your belly can? Why does that sign say 1 mile to state line? Cool season grasses often need a little help at the end of summer, especially this summer. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal the secrets of successfully overseeding an existing but patchy lawn, plus your fabulous phone calls.
Beautiful blossoms, beneficial bugs, unbelievable beefsteak tomatoes. Mike helps us break through to the best garden possible every Saturday morning at 11 on WHYY.
I'm Brooke Gladstone, and on this week's On the Media, former New Hampshire governor and Romney booster John Sununu says that the campaign shouldn't let a bunch of fact-checkers derail an attack ad.
With all due respect to the, quote, fact-checkers that have called that ad wrong, they don't know what they're talking about. Let me explain to you why they're wrong.
Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNY.